This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, Edwina Farley with you. Thanks for joining me and the team as we take our weekly trip around a big country. This week, we're preserving rural history. We'll meet a farmer restoring a church on his property that dates back to the 1800s. We'll join a ranger heading out on a rabbit-catching mission with a couple of secret weapons in tow. We'll visit a tiny town that's attracting hundreds of tourists to its festival celebrating pumpkins and meet a group of Indigenous women who are pulling on the boxing gloves for fitness.
When you feel good, like within yourself, you could do anything. You're happier. You give it a go. You're really setting yourself goals too. Like you're looking at your life and you're like, well, that was me and this is going to be me. Like, it's just a stronger mindset and it's, you know, like we can do this and we could do anything.
Absolutely. Our weekly sessions with a boxing coach are boosting Indigenous women's strength and confidence. That's coming up. First, though, let's head to northern Tasmania, where a farmer is taking on a big restoration project, repairing a historic church and converting it into a farm stay.
We're standing in front of an old chapel, a Wesleyan chapel. We believe one of the first services in the chapel was 1836.
There's some magnificent historic buildings on rural properties across Tasmania, and this old church on a farm near Evandale, just south of Launceston Airport, is a great example. Hello, I'm Larissa Smith, and I'm here with sheep breeder Peter Blackwood. When he moved to this property 7 years ago, this building was being used to store hay and was in a state of disrepair. Now, Peter is overseeing a team renovating the old church and giving it a new lease on life as two boutique farmstay accommodation units.
We believed it was too nice a building to let fall down, so we looked at it for probably 4 or 5 years and then came up with some ideas how we'd use the building. And we came up with the idea of farm accommodation, B&B, because we're close to the airport, 5-10 minutes from the airport. With a beautiful outlook from the building, looking over the valleys with the hawthorn hedgerows, and we wanted to keep the integrity of the building so it had to pay for itself instead of falling down.
Where did you start? It's a massive undertaking.
A few friends helped me clean it out of old rotten hay. We talked to a builder who was interested in the project and architects, so we came up with some plans how we could work it out. We always thought it would be a one-unit building, but the consulting engineer that we're using, or consulting builder, said no, there's enough room there for a two-unit facility, which actually sounded better financially. So we started with the plans there and how we fitted it all in and tie the builders, bricklayers and everyone, and then source bricks, put it back to its some sort of use.
And these were recycled bricks, heritage bricks?
They're all early bricks we're using, either from the building itself, or I purchased some bricks from Campbelltown probably 3 or 4 years ago, knowing we had a lot of buildings to do up on the property. So we've actually getting a use for a lot of the bricks that I've purchased and reusing. Yes, they're all old bricks from the 30s or 1830s to 50s, I guess.
And they're still in good nick.
They are still there. That's the beauty of them. Like you can see about, there's a lot of broken ones, but that's because we've had to use halves. But generally, yeah, the bricks are in very good integrity.
It's a Georgian-style building done in an English bond pattern, and I've just recreated that and put in new doorways, made new window openings, and rebuilt where the sections would have been damaged.
Martin Jordan is the bricklayer working on the Harlan Rise Church makeover.
The English bond pattern is a row of headers and a row of stretchers alternately, and the wall's 3 bricks thick. Because water brings down all buildings over time, and the water affects these bricks less than what it would if it had been a timber structure, for sure. Because the roof's hasn't been on it for years, and it's been open to the weather. But basically it's all pretty much intact, so it has held up to the weather for sure.
What are you using in between the bricks?
a lime mortar. So it's the same mortar as was used back then. It's a slaked lime. It's a rock quick lime product. You slake it down with water, it boils, and then turns into a paste, and then you mix that with your sand. So sometimes I have to reuse or recycle the original mortar just to try and get a colour match. Often these sands that these guys use were site sand, so where they dug the foundations for the stonework, what they dug out of the ground was what they used for their sands.
Restoration homes and restoration of period buildings on properties, this has become your bread and butter?
That's it, yeah. And I like doing it too, and it's a good... I like the history of the buildings and the people that you're meeting and all the different things that you get to see. Yeah, that other people wouldn't normally see, all down through the Midlands, all those farming properties and that. There's magnificent buildings around the estate, for sure.
Are you getting more work? Do you see that there's been a bit of a resurgence in the restoration of these rural properties?
Definitely. I'm usually 12 months behind, so I've always got 12 months work in front of me. There's always people waiting all the time, yeah.
How long will you be on this project?
This one's coming to an end, probably another... maybe 8 days, but I've been here on this one for probably about 6 weeks, 6 or 7 weeks, yeah.
I'll let you get on with it.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, it's fairly unique. There's a lot of colonial buildings about, but it is close to town. There's a beautiful outlook looking down the valley. And I think it's still quiet as well. And, you know, being so close to the airport, we can see the airport from where we're standing, but you don't hear any traffic, and we're close to the township of Evandale, which... you know, lends itself to that type of activities. There's always a shortage of accommodation in this area when events are happening in the north. It's one of the nicer older buildings on the property, even though there's good bigger buildings like the house and the barn and the stables. But it's just such an early piece of colonial architecture. Putting it to some use, I'm actually getting a fair bit of enjoyment from it and watching the tradespeople putting it together. And anyone who's visited have just said what a fantastic outlook, and I've never really noticed that before when I've driven past, and you know, even neighbours, so they find it, you know, a really nice piece of history putting back to a use.
We're going to one of the local islands on the Murray. The rabbits are just starting to get established there since the floods in 2016. It's actually pretty unique as they haven't dug many holes there yet. They're all living above ground in blackberry bushes.
Ranger Corbin Geyer knows the harm feral rabbits can cause to native flora and fauna, as well as the damage they can wreak on the landscape, leaving holes that can be fatal for wandering livestock.
They can get really bad, especially along where we're going. It's on a riverbank. They get into the riverbank and they absolutely just tear it up to bits. They cause massive erosion, and also all the seedlings that get planted in these reserves all get the tops chewed off and the roots and scratched out and ring-barked as well.
Hello, I'm Alison Jess. I'm heading out with Corbin on a rabbit-catching mission along the Murray River near Albury in southern New South Wales. Corbin has brought along some secret weapons, his terrier dog Pepper and a few ferrets.
I've been ferreting pretty hard for the last 5 years, although I've been hunting pretty much my whole life in lots of different forms. I just found that, especially on smaller blocks, farmers and other property owners and managers, they prefer using ferrets over other methods.
Corbin believes using ferrets is a more humane way of dealing with rabbits than other methods like baiting or shooting.
Using baited carrots or shooting or that sort of thing, it can be pretty inhumane. The ferrets either flush the rabbit and you catch the rabbit and dispatch it straight away, or they miss it completely. It's either 100% dead or 100% alive. Not gut shot, miserable, down a warren somewhere, or fitting because it's eaten some 1080 bait.
Corbin, so we've stopped?
We're on the island we were talking about, just in front of a dozen pretty large blackberry bushes. There's a big gap between them, and it seems like all the rabbits are just... oh, there's one.
Oh, there's one, yeah.
Yeah, they're all just living inside the blackberry bushes. I'm just getting the long nets out. We imported these from the UK. They also get called a fence net. Traditionally, especially in Australia, when you go ferreting, you use purse nets, which are a foot or so long, and go over a hole. They'd be absolutely pointless in this scenario. I prefer using these long nets. they're a bit of a pain to set up, but I think they're a lot better for the job. You're not walking around the warrens bothering the rabbits, and they seem to come out a lot easier.
So we're standing in front of a blackberry bush now, so your aim is to put this around it?
Yeah, the long net goes all the way around the whole blackberry bush. I'll put it off a fair few metres off the bush. And then, yeah, when the animals go in, hopefully they flush the feral ones out.
We've nearly got it surrounded. So how big an area would you say this is?
Well, both nets are 50 metres long, and we've gone through 1.5 so far. So a 75-metre circle.
And it's all enclosed now?
It's all locked up. I'll just go around and double-check that everything's nice and tight and lined up. And, we'll see if anyone's home. This is actually my friend's. I stole off him. It's just a little, ply box with dividers in the middle. That's a lot easier to get one or two ferrets out at a time instead of opening a big cage and a horde coming out at you all at once.
How many are we going to start with, Corbin?
I'll just throw two of the younger ones in here and see how they go.
Putting them in?
Yeah, I'm hoping they can smell the rabbits, and yeah, one of them's at least starting to go in now, and the other one will get the hint in a minute. They'll walk around in here till they find the rabbit, chase the rabbit. Rabbit comes out, and yeah, we'll catch the rabbit in the net, hopefully. Yeah, so we're just going to throw a little pepper in this blackberry bush. She'll work her way through the blackberries until she finds one, and it'll flush it straight into the net. Go on, get in there. Come on. Got first one. That happened in about 15 seconds after she went in. Here.
So we're done for the day, Corbin. We're driving back. For people who want to do ferreting, Corbin, what should they think about before heading out?
They should think about the ferrets more as a pet, I think, and not just a tool. They're one of those animals, you put into them, you get back. So a healthy, happy ferret does a lot more work than one that just sits in a cage until it's time to go catch rabbits. But it's also important to remember that they're not a dog, they're not a cat, they're just a tame animal. If they get lost, they're not coming back. In regards to ferreting with them, there's a few different ways you can go about it. Most people just use ferrets with nets or ferrets with dogs, though it's important to check your state laws about using dogs with ferrets. You'd be surprised what you can and can't do with dogs. It's also important to note, it's not a golden bullet if you want to get rid of all of the rabbits on your property. If you're methodical about it, you can put a good dent in the population, but you also need to have other measures in place.
Ranger Corbin Geyer sharing his tips on catching rabbits with the help of ferrets. He was chatting with our reporter Alison Jess. You're with a Big Country on RN. Still to come, we're heading along to a pumpkin festival to find out why it's drawing big crowds to a small country town and how pulling on the boxing gloves and practicing uppercuts and jabs is helping a group of Indigenous women feel empowered.
We're going two straight, alternating. One, two, left, right, uppercut, uppercut, hook. Lift that elbow up for your hooks. Off you go.
Hello, I'm Vanessa Milton, here at Camel Rock Beach near Bermagui on the New South Wales far south coast, where a group of Indigenous women are taking part in a boxing session. The women from nearby Wallaga Lake Koori village come together to train once a week. Since they started training, their strength and fitness has improved. But this isn't just about physical transformation. Boxing also helps these women feel confident and empowered.
When I put the gloves on, I feel great. I'm getting strong.
Keep the elbow bent, that's it. That's better.
I just feel like a whole different person when I got the gloves on. I'm more confident within myself, like I know what I'm doing and what I'm aiming for.
Remember to focus on the exhale.
I feel so empowered, fit, healthy, I could do anything.
Double jab on the left, right cross. Here you go.
My name's Kerry Parsons and I'm from Wallaga Lake Community. I'm a strong Yuin lady. This year will be 3 years we've been training. It's just looking after ourselves.
Speed it up a little bit. Nice hooks, Troylene.
I'm Troylene Parsons. I'm 28. At first, it was a bit hard for me because I wasn't into the whole fitness thing. I was shy and I wouldn't really talk to anyone. So during this, it brought me out of my comfort zone and getting to talk with all the other women and, yeah.
When we first started, it's like, oh, do we really want to do this? It's like, it was a bit confronting because we didn't know how to come out of our shell. It's like we always hid in our house and weren't out, you know, doing stuff in front of people. It's like shame job for us. We were shame. Now we're like, look at us. We're singing out to our aunties and sisters that walk past and we're out on the community. We get out there and we do it.
Keep moving.
I'm Veronica. I'm 19 and I've been doing this for like 6 months.
Getting better, way better.
It was hard when I first started. My legs hurting, my back, my arms. But I kept on going because I had people there telling me not to give up.
Double jab on your left, straight cross on the right. Off you go.
We're doing it for ourselves, but we all look out for each other and that's where our strength comes from. We feed off each other. We lift each other up. One of us could be having a shit day and it's like, that just gets pushed aside and we're there doing, you know, doing the fun stuff and laughing and when everyone goes, it's like, we'll sit down and have a yarn. It's like, you know, if we see someone down, we'll like, do our workout and then we're like, sis, are you okay? It's like, yeah. And then like, no, I'm not. And, you know, it's a conversation.
For me, it's knowing that, in a way, it's also a defence thing for me. Because a couple of years ago, I was being hit around. So I guess in a way, me doing this, I'm motivating myself and I'm putting the confidence within, like, in myself.
Well, when we first done it, you know, some of us ladies at home, we were looking at each other like, gee, we wish we could have learnt this skill when we were, you know, younger, because where we lived, it's like we grew up with violence and stuff, you know, out on the community. It's all good now. But it was something like we would have loved to have because we went through domestic violence with our partners and we're like, where was this like, you know, 20 years ago? This would have been a handy skill for us to have like when we were younger. Yeah.
1 minute to go, make it count. This is your time.
When you feel good, like within yourself, you could do anything. You're happier. You give it a go. You're really setting yourself goals too. Like you're looking at your life and you're like, well, that was me and this is gonna be me. Like, it's just a stronger mindset and it's, you know, like we can do this and we could do anything.
I used to be so negative, but now I'm positive. I'm just being, trying to get myself up, thinking of positives, keep on trying.
35 seconds to go, come on!
We're like strong, proud women and full of energy.
Time. Love's off.
Bad.
Oh, good work.
The streets are absolutely lined with people and the roads have all been blocked to allow the parade to pass by. There's giant pumpkins and people wearing pumpkin outfits. It's a real celebration for the town.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Nichols here in Gomeri, northwest of Gympie, where a grand parade is taking place as part of the town's annual pumpkin festival. 23 years ago, locals in this tiny community came up with the idea of hosting a pumpkin festival to raise morale and attract tourists to the town in the face of crippling drought. It was a big success then and has been every year since. Festival coordinator Kim Boyter is thrilled with the large crowd that has come along to this year's festival.
Just thrilled beyond comprehension. It's just incredible the number of people that have turned out for the day again for the 23rd year in a row.
What's the population of Gomeri?
Last census was 664 people. So today I think we've got about 20,000. But more to the point, we've had people in our town for a whole week, you know, and they've been enjoying our country hospitality, spending their money, helping boost our town's economy, and that's what we do it for.
Run me through some of the statistics for what it takes to make this happen.
It starts out about 8 weeks prior to festival, where we gather a group of volunteers of about 40 people. We use 300 kilos of pumpkins and make about 350 litres of soup. Then we do 36 odd dozen scones and 20 pumpkin pies. And the most important part of it all, of the whole process, is our band of volunteers. And without them, none of this would be possible. This year, we've probably got about 70 volunteers on the ground, and it's not enough. For the volume of people that we've attracted, we need probably 170 people to service them. So,
how did this all start?
23 years ago, Gomeri was in the grip of the biggest and worst drought that had ever been experienced in the area. Community morale was very low, so a group of the community members decided that they were going to do something to improve that, came up with the quirky idea of holding a pumpkin festival and rolling pumpkins down the hill. At that stage, pumpkins was a huge crop out here. It was a huge industry. And so the pumpkin festival was born.
Now, the farmer who supplied all of these pumpkins is a bit shy and didn't want to talk to me, but you wanted to pay tribute to him for just the amount of work he does. What's involved in that?
Yes, my lovely pumpkin grower, who I will remain nameless for his own privacy, he starts about Christmas, between Christmas and New Year, I believe, he plants his pumpkin crop and then he nurtures it and prays to the gods every day that he gets the rain at the right time, the sun at the right time. And this year it was very stressful because we've been in drought once again and we were relying on rain at the right time. And he's done an awesome job. He's provided us with probably close to 1,500 pumpkins. So it's looking to be a bumper crop for him. We're always trying to think of different things of how we can regenerate and reinvigorate people's interest in our festival. This year, the biggest thing we've done is close the highways. Never been done before. So we need to make sure that works so as we can get that again next year. And that enables us to just keep putting more and more in to our festival to create the atmosphere that we've got today.
It's great stuff.
It's crazy stuff.
If you're looking for something to do, we've got a cooking demonstration starting here in about 3 minutes.
I'm Jason Ford. I'm the South Burnett Regional Food Ambassador.
And I'm Matt Galinsky, Gympie Regional Council's Food Ambassador.
It's very important, you know, we've been drought declared in this region for so long. So things like tourism have become really critical to supplement our economy. Regional products are a way of drawing in tourists. So an event like this, you get people from the coast, from inland, all coming to one place where you can showcase all the products you have.
Okay, Matt Galinsky, Jason Ford, tell me what your best pumpkin recipes are.
I'm about to make mine right now, which is a white chocolate and pumpkin mousse with a pumpkin and lemon curd sauce.
Wow, that sounds out there.
Well, I like to do recipes that people recognise, but with a surprising ingredient.
I'm actually making pumpkin flatbread. So I've made pumpkin puree and yogurt, add that to flour with some baking powder and then rolling those out. I'm going to go really Mexican style. I made some sour cream last night by getting some Cholula cream and adding yogurt to it and just leaving it on the bench overnight, so it's sour cream now. Red borer beans that CC's brought for me as well, so it'll be beans, tomatillo. I've got some pork from Piggy in the Middle who are in Kilkeven, so I've kind of got all those different local elements of Gympie in one little tortilla.
The festival finale is the Great Pumpkin Roll, which takes place down the very steep Policeman's Hill.
Okay, here we go. Are you ready, rollers? 1, 2, 3, roll those pumpkins!
Oh, you're looking pretty boy, huh?
Oh, you nearly got taken out by a man-eating pumpkin.
Now, where have you travelled from?
Macleay Island, you know where it is? Out from Ridland Bay.
And what do you think of the event that they've put on?
Fantastic.
Here?
Fantastic. There's lots and lots of people and they've done a very, very good job.
Hi, I'm from Karoi and I'm having a great day. It's my first pumpkin festival and I'm really, really enjoying it. It's a great community effort.
I'm from Gympie. This is absolutely tremendous.
I've got some of the fellow members of the crowd keeping an eye out that I don't get hit by any pumpkins as we interview here.
Yeah, we won't get hit, love. We won't get hit.
And what do you think of it?
I think it's fantastic.
I think it brings people into the town and they get to see what it's like living out in the bush.
It's pretty beautiful out here, isn't it?
It is.
Our reporter Jennifer Nichols talking to some of the crowd attending the annual Pumpkin Festival at Gymerie in the Gympie region of Queensland. And that's the show for today. You can find out more information on any of those stories. Just head to the Radio National homepage and find Big Country under the Programs tab. I'm Edwina Farley. Thanks for listening and bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.